Welcome to another edition of the Volunteer State. I'm Blake Topmeyer with John Adams of the Knoxville News Sentinel. John, the 2020 college football season officially has come to a close. Alabama rolled through the season and dominated Ohio State in the national championship game. What'd you think about that title tilt, John?
Just a total wipeout. I thought it would be a close game. Ohio State, though, in a convincing win against Clemson, that was the only time this season that it played at that level. Alabama's been playing at a very high level all season, and it amazes me how nobody can figure out how to cover Devontae Smith. He's a really good player and a good receiver, but normally good defenses can take players like that, not take them out of a game maybe, but at least limit their success. And it just seems like the guy is always open.
John, the season's now over, but Tennessee's coach in limbo counter continues. I believe last week when we recorded this podcast, we had it at 21 days, and we're recording this a week to the date later. So we now have that coach in limbo counter at 28 days, where Tennessee has not definitively come out and made clear Jeremy Pruitt's status for the 2021 season. Is it getting to the point, John, where it could be too late for Tennessee to make a coaching change? How late is too late for Tennessee to make a move if they want to make a change at head coach?
In this case, I don't think you can ever be too late. I mean, I think you should have a new coach in place by the season opener of 2021, ideally maybe even before spring practice. But if it takes longer than that, better to take your time and make the right decision for a change. Philip Fulmer only needed 6 days to hire Jeremy Pruitt. You see how that worked out. So I can't be too critical of Tennessee for taking its time. I don't know. I mean, do you think Tennessee is digging up more potential NCAA violations and using that to strengthen its case of not honoring Jeremy Pruitt's buyout, firing for cause, as they say?
That's a good question, John. I mean, I think interviews are obviously ongoing this week, but you know, in terms of the reason for the delay, I think that's hard to answer, because if Tennessee wanted to fire Pruitt for cause or to leverage down the buyout, I mean, I don't understand why they couldn't do that and continue the investigation. It's not like you have to pay him his buyout all on day one after firing him. You could say, we're firing you for cause. If you don't like it, we'll see you in court, which would happen about a year from now. Or you could fire him and go to work on leveraging down that buyout, or really, I think probably work on that has already begun if Tennessee wants to fire Pruitt. So I guess I don't really understand the cause for the delay, other than, you know, if you think you still need to interview people on Pruitt's staff in connection with this investigation, it's probably easier to get them to cooperate with interviews if they're still employed by the university. If Tennessee fires Pruitt and his staff and then wants to interview them as part of the investigation, well, I'm not sure what reason they would have to show up or cooperate at all with those interviews. They would no longer work for Tennessee. There'd be no motivation for him to do so. This isn't a criminal case where you can subpoena someone. This is an investigation into whether Tennessee committed NCAA violations. So that, to me, would be the only reason to keep waiting here. Or if they truly haven't decided whether they want to bring Pruitt back or not next season. I just don't see how at this point, at mid-January, how that can be the case. I mean, surely they know which direction they want to go here.
I would like to say that I think your legal expertise really adds something to these podcasts. I know you're not an attorney, and I don't believe you ever went to law school, but you have studied the law extensively, and it shows up, I think, at it just adds something to the podcast. So thank you, Blake.
And I believe your sarcasm adds a lot to this podcast, John. So I think we're both bringing something to the table.
I really didn't mean to be sarcastic.
Okay, well, I'll take it for the compliment that it is then. Do you think Tennessee is opening itself up to, or does it matter whether it's opening itself up to criticism by letting its head coach twist in the wind for 4 weeks now? Is that a look that you want if you're going to open up the coaching position? Because I could see where other potential head coaches would say, look, this place hung their last guy out to dry for a month before deciding to act. I don't want to jump into that situation. Do you think that's a potentially dangerous move for Tennessee or a red flag for other candidates if this job is to open the way that they've strung this along now for weeks after the end of the season?
Not really. I think most coaches view themselves as being successful. So they can't even comprehend that they would actually fail and be in Jeremy Pruitt's twist in the wind situation. I think it's important to note that although he's twisting in the wind and it can't be certain of his immediate job future, he's still getting paid and he's getting paid quite a lot.
Do you think Tennessee's losing out on any candidates that it would want if opening up this position? I mean, as we record this, Bill O'Brien has been linked to Alabama's offensive coordinator opening. Now, I'm not saying Bill O'Brien is a name that would be at the top of Tennessee's list if the job opened or not. He is someone we talked about last week on this podcast as being someone who would make some sense for this job if it opened, given his resume. But, you know, do you feel like going too late in the calendar will close down any candidates that would otherwise be interested in this job? Or is it a case where if the likes of Jamie Chadwell, Billy Napier, Hugh Freeze were interested on December 25th, Christmas Day, they'll still be interested on January 25th?
I think the coaches you mentioned would be interested, whether it's 3 minutes or 3 weeks from now. Someone like Bill O'Brien, who's been successful, had a winning record at Penn State in 2 years, had a winning record in the NFL, is offensive-minded, worked for Bill Belichick. I don't know. I think you probably should have moved a little faster on him. Now, I guess, imagine this scenario. He takes a job under Nick Saban as Alabama's offensive coordinator, and then Tennessee comes calling, offers him, I don't know, what would he get as an offensive coordinator at Alabama, maybe?
Well, Steve Sarkisian was making $2.5 million.
There you go, $2.5 million. So Tennessee says, well, we'll double that. Then he might reconsider. However, do you really want to make an enemy of Nick Saban? I mean, he's been...
It doesn't matter. He's going to drill you on the field anyway, whether you're friends or enemies.
That's a good point. I don't know. It might just come down to last couple of drives. Instead of having his backup in, he's got his starting quarterback in throwing for the end zone. So, yeah, it could add on some of the damage, but you're right. That's a good point. I think somebody in his position, I think it's worked for other coaches. They've had success, and they get fired, and they're getting plenty of money. So it's almost like a rehabilitation stint with the Nick Saban clinic, coaching clinic. You go there, you put in a year or two, and then you're pronounced fit to win a whole bunch of games and have great success in your profession. I would think Bill O'Brien has conferred with Bill Belichick. Belichick and Saban kind of travel in the same championship circle, so he might advise O'Brien, well, you'll be a better coach if you spend a year or two with Nick Saban than if you took the head coaching job at whatever university.
And now Butch Jones travels in that circle of championship coaches. I noticed he was on the sidelines high-fiving Alabama players during the national championship game. You know, for someone who's a special assistant to the head coach and a former analyst, a former intern, no one grabs the camera's attention quite like Butch Jones. That's a real skill, I think, that has gone unnoticed for far too long, is Butch's ability to always know where that television camera is. I mean, there's so many cameras in the stadium. When a game is broadcast, how does he know which one's hot at any given time? But he's really got a great ability to land himself on camera there. And so one final hurrah for Butch before heading off to Jonesboro, Arkansas, where he'll be the head coach at Arkansas State.
I mean, if I were an Arkansas fan, I would be a little bit concerned since he's not actually calling plays. He's just there at the game, almost like a spectator. However, despite the fact that Butch wasn't a raging success at Tennessee, I will say that he paid great attention to details that often didn't matter to the program or the general public, but were important to Butch. And so I think that falls in line. My guess is when Butch got up yesterday morning, he had a things to do list. And one of them was find the camera and be in front of it. And his execution was probably as good as Alabama's, because I'm like you. I'm first of all, I'm like, why is he there? He's a head coach at Arkansas State. And I don't think anybody was looking at seeing him on camera and saying, oh my gosh, that's Butch Jones, championship coach. He should work wonders at Arkansas State. I just didn't see it that way, but I think Butch is a creature of habit, and he's got an outline of what needs to be done in every situation, whether it's sleep studies or what you're eating that day or how many watches you buy. He takes care of the details, and good for him. So he's a champion.
I've taken us on a detour of Butch Jones here, but I don't apologize for that. Any Butch Jones detour, I think, is worthwhile. But getting us back on the topic at hand here with Jeremy Pruitt's status, you know, Tennessee's students are set to enroll for the semester about a week from now on January 20th. Do you think the university owes some fairness to the football players in announcing what they plan to do with their head football coach before they enroll in the semester? So, you know, they give them an opportunity to, if they wanted to play for Pruitt and Tennessee is going to fire Pruitt, that they can enter the transfer portal before enrolling this semester, or vice versa. Do you think the university owes something to its athletes to make a decision before this semester starts, or do you not consider that as something the university should be keeping in mind?
Well, as I learned in the Army, the mission is more important than the man. And so, yeah, you could say to be fair to the individual, it should let players know that our coaches might not even be here. The assistant coach that you're so enthralled with might not be here. But I also think let the buyer beware. If you don't have an inkling that Jeremy Pruitt might not be the head coach, then you may have bigger problems.
Well, that serves as a good transition, John, to some other news I wanted to touch on, with Tennessee adding last week graduate transfer quarterback Hendon Hooker from Virginia Tech. You know, Hooker was a decent player at Virginia Tech. Wasn't a great quarterback, but I thought was decent over his 2 years there as the starter. And really, you could probably make the case that he was the best quarterback in the transfer portal, which I think also speaks somewhat to the other quarterbacks that were in the transfer portal. I think Hooker ranked near the top of that list. But, you know, 15-game starter at Virginia Tech, I think he's going to contend for the starting job here at Tennessee. I mean, certainly Harrison Bailey and Caden Salter ought to be in that competition. Really a true three-man competition, I think, for the quarterback job, with Brian Maurer also being in the mix there. But I think he would probably be the longest shot to win the starting job. But, you know, I think my first reaction when Tennessee landed Hendon Hooker was, how in the world did this coaching staff, with such an unclear future, land one of the best transfer quarterbacks in the portal? And you know, I think it goes to your point of buyer beware if you're a player. Apparently that didn't faze Hendon Hooker. He saw an opportunity, And he took it at Tennessee, and maybe that'll be fine for him, regardless of who winds up being head coach, the opportunity to contend for the quarterback job here.
I think it's sort of a built-in virtue among college football players, or even a lower level of football. They're taught at a young age to trust their coach. And so when they're talking to a coach, he's an authority figure, and they believe he has their best interest at heart. Also, these coaches learn at a very young age, it's very important in your line of work to be able to convince someone that you have their best interest at heart. So you consider those two factors. You could have 500 people say, what are you thinking? You don't even know who your coach will be at Tennessee. But then that coach gets on the line and says, we're not going anywhere, son. We're going to be right here. So are you. We're going to be together. We're talking long term. This isn't a temporary thing. So great to have you with us. And, you know, trust me.
And Jay Graham was important in the recruitment of Hendon Hooker. They had a relationship dating back to when Hooker was in high school. They're both North Carolina natives. And I actually think, you know, sometimes when there is a coaching change, John, we see one assistant kept as a holdover from the previous staff. And I think if there is a coaching change at Tennessee and there is one assistant coach kept, I think Jay Graham is the likeliest to be that person. Now, you know, obviously when you're a quarterback who decides on a school, I think your relationship with the offensive coordinator and the quarterback's coach matters a lot too. And I'm not saying that, you know, they would obviously change if there's a head coaching change. So, but perhaps one face will stick around at Tennessee regardless of what happens there. And maybe Hendon Hooker just thought, he hasn't said this, so maybe I'm reading too much into the situation, but he said he wanted the opportunity to play for Jeremy Pruitt, Jim Chaney, etc. But maybe he's thinking, well, who cares who the coach is there? Look at the quarterbacks in the room. This is an SEC school where I have a chance to win the starting job.
I really do think the SEC is an important factor in all kinds of recruiting, whether you're recruiting high school seniors or you're recruiting transfers. It just, as I say, it just means more. I think people believe this is my chance to prove myself at the highest level. And I think people are good at rationalizing why they might not have had as much success as they had hoped for at another program. But now they say, well, this is the opportunity for me. I'm going to an SEC school. I'm competing against the very best players. It's an opportunity to prove myself. And I think that's a real draw to players at any. I mean, even as good as Clemson has been, I still think ACC players would look at the SEC as a step up. My gosh, if you watch the national championship game, Alabama might have had 7 first-round picks playing in that game. So you're going against against the best, and I think that's a draw, and maybe a bigger draw than it should be, but, you know, it's a shot for those guys.
John, I was asked by someone in my text group, which I know you're a big fan of. And
yeah, I am. That's really an intellectual bunch. You seem to attract the higher intellects, and so it's reflected in your group.
There you go. Well, someone in the text group asked me after the Hendon Hooker addition to sort of handicap the odds of the 4 quarterbacks becoming the starter for 2021. And I didn't go Vegas style. I went more of a percentage chance in offering odds for these 4 quarterbacks on Tennessee's roster to be the starter. And we went with, for this conversation, I went with the first game of the 2021 season, because I think that's a more fair question than who's going to be starting in the 8th game of the season, because I don't know how the season's going to unfold. But I'm going to give you the percentages I offered and see what you think of those and whether you think I'm off or you might have something different. I gave Hendon Hooker and Harrison Bailey both a 40% chance of being the starter for Tennessee's season opener. I gave Caden Salter a 15% chance, and I gave Brian Maurer / other, I don't know who other would be, but just kind of a catch-all there, as a 5% chance. What do you think of that? 40% for Bailey and Hooker, 15% for Salter, and 5% for anybody else. What do you think of those numbers?
I probably fall in line with that. I really don't understand why Brian Maurer is still here. How many other quarterbacks have transferred? I can't keep up with all of them.
From Tennessee? Two. Yeah, Jarrett Garantano and JT Schrout.
What about the guy that came here from Maryland? Did he go anywhere, or did he just...
He is at Rhode Island now. Yes, well, Kasim Hill.
So that's three quarterbacks who transferred. So I thought Brian Maurer's kind of... He has started here, and Tennessee is bringing in a running quarterback in Hooker from Virginia Tech, and maybe he looks at that and says, oh, well, they're going toward a more running quarterback type offense, and that would enhance my chances of winning the starting job. I don't agree with that line of thinking, but so what percentage did you give him? 5%?
Yes.
Okay. I'll say 4%.
4%. So that leaves another percentage point. You could separate this tie between Harrison Bailey and Hendon Hooker at 40% apiece and declare one of them the outright favorite for the job, or you want to give that extra percentage point to Caden Salter. What are you doing with that extra percentage?
I just think it would be hard for Caden Salter to start as a true freshman in the first game. And that's what you're talking about. So I would probably lower, what was your percentage, 15%?
Yes.
I don't know. I'll give him a 16%.
So he gets the extra percentage point. So you refuse to determine who the favorite is between Bailey and Hooker. You're content with that being a tie at 40%.
No, I give that to Bailey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I would. I don't percentage wise. Let's say he's got a 40% chance. Do these percentages need to add up to 100%?
Ideally.
Oh, okay. I didn't even consider that factor.
You thought I was just assigning numbers with no weight.
Yeah, I really did. Oh, okay. Well, we don't have time for me to rethink the whole thing, but let's say I'll give Bailey a slight edge there and say he has a 45% chance to start.
Okay. John, the other newsy development that's happened since our last podcast that I wanted to get your thoughts on, Jarrett Garantano, we always go back and forth on the pronunciation. You know, that's because half of his career we called him Jarrett Garantano, and then he said he wanted to be known as Jarrett Garantano because that's actually the way you pronounce his name. And I try to do the Garantano, but I slip back into old habits. I believe you've just been entrenched in Garantano. I think you kind of thought, hey, it's too late in the game to be changing the pronunciation, right?
Well, I've been through this before when I was a columnist in Jackson, Mississippi. Mississippi State had a basketball player named Ricky Brown, who I think changed his name twice. Ricky without the E, Ricky with the E, and then Ricky without the E. So what are you going to do? I mean, you just
guarantee him Rick.
Well, what did Kelly Stouffer, the college football analyst, what did he call Garantano or Garantano?
I don't know. He's been called all kinds of things, and people butcher his last name pretty badly.
It's a tough. I'm sorry, but I just completely forgot why you're bringing him up.
I wanted to see what you're... I didn't even get to my point because I stumbled over the pronunciation of his name there. But getting to my point finally, what did you think about his transfer to Washington State? I mean, on the surface, he got a guy from Jersey going to finish out his career in Pullman, Washington. Now, I admit I've never been to Pullman, but it seems like a bit of an odd marriage. But also, this is college football. It's not like Garantano's buying property, theoretically, out in Pullman or purchasing a home. He's going to spend one season there. And so it's really about the marriage on the field. What did you think about Garantano's move to finish out his career at Washington State in the Pac-12?
I was a little bit surprised, and part of that is simply because Washington State is no longer on my radar. I just think of Washington State as Mike Leach. And the first thought I had was when Garantano announced his transfer destination, I thought, I don't know if he really fits what Mike Leach does offensively. And then I realized, oh, wait, it doesn't matter what Mike Leach does offensively. He's at Mississippi State. And I don't know who the Washington State coach is.
I think it's like Radovic or Rolovic or something like that. It starts with an R and ends with a Vic.
So you're saying a quarterback whose name is difficult to pronounce is now going to play for a coach whose name is difficult to, not just difficult to pronounce, but difficult to remember.
Well, yeah, it might be really easy to pronounce. I just can't remember it. Through the powers of Google here, it's Nick Rolovic, or maybe it's Rolovich. So maybe it is hard to pronounce because I don't know whether it's Rolovic or Rolovich, but that might be more of a indication of my lack of knowledge of Washington State football than it really has to do with his name.
Well, either way, I certainly wish Garantano well. And he didn't have great success at Tennessee, but man, that guy had some huge obstacles to overcome. I mean, the first two seasons, he took a beating back there, taking snaps on behalf of the Vols. He had very little protection, and that can't help but affect the way you play. He may play better at Washington State.
Who got the better transfer quarterback, John? Tennessee and Hendon Hooker or Washington State and Jarrett Garantano?
That's a tough one, but I go with Washington State and Garantano.
Wow. What's the reasoning there? I know numbers-wise, they're about pretty similar. Hooker runs a little bit more. Garantano has more experience as a start. What tips the scales, do you think, in JG's favor?
Well, it's possible that he'll have a better quarterback coach than Hooker will. I don't think you can make a strong argument against that. I mean, just, you know, Tennessee's quarterback coach against the field, you'd take the field. And so, who knows? Maybe those guys will click. They obviously saw something in Garantano that they like. Notice I'm switching the pronunciation. I go Garantano sometimes and then Garantano.
Sure. I think that's fair. I mean, we switched the pronunciation of his name midway through his college career. So, I mean, really shame on the person who was doing the pronunciation guide and the media guide before his freshman season. That could have set us all down the correct path, although we probably never would have looked at that anyway. So maybe not.
No, we wouldn't have.
All right, John, I want to close by bringing us back to the top of the discussion here on Jeremy Pruitt's fate as Tennessee's coach. We've got the coach in limbo counter at 28 days. When we record this podcast this time next week, will we have coach in limbo at 35 days, or do you think Pruitt learns his fate regardless, whether he's being retained, whether he's being let go, whether they settle on some sort of reduced buyout, regardless of what that fate is, will we know it by this time next week, or are we going to be sitting in the same situation?
I think we'll know it. I think we'll know it by the end of the week. And as I said, I don't know, what's the difference how long Tennessee takes? I mean, they get a guy in here. I don't think they're going to make a deep charge in the next before the next signing class. I mean, the next signing date in February. So it's more important to get rid of Jeremy Pruitt and then get the right guy as coach. So I'm not getting too hung up on the length of time it's taking. Plus, it enables me to write more columns and speculate on what's going on, even if what's going on is absolutely nothing. That's a point of speculation too.
There you go, John. It's all about John Adams in your viewpoint. If it's good for you, it's a-okay, right?
Well, I can't argue with that.
All right, John. We'll be back next week and see if we're discussing a coach being retained, a coach being let go, or a coach in limbo. We'll pick up the conversation then. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Volunteer State.